Now it is time for part two of this month's book club. We've already spoken to the wonderful Sylvia Kent, and joining us on the line is the equally wonderful Karen Bowman. She's a historian, author and speaker as well. So good morning, good afternoon rather.
Yes, good morning, Michelle. Or this afternoon, as you say, these lockdowns make me not know what time of day it is half the time.
Exactly, what the day of the week it is. You've got such an interesting job that you do, and you're writing and everything, and you've had a passion for writing history. So when did that writing bug grab you?
I've always had it, even as a child. You know, I'd read historical fiction and things like that. But I suppose about 20 odd years ago, when I got the chance to write for Essex Life and Countryside, a friend of mine would take photos for the magazine, and he said, "If you want to write an article, then I'll put a word in for you, but the rest is up to you." So I started to write local history. Yeah. And thoroughly enjoyed it, and luckily they took it up, and I wrote for them for about 2 years, I believe.
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed it. And of course then one idea I had for an article led me to write Essex Girls, my first book, and from then on, that one of those particular stories is actually now going to turn into a novel. I'm working on my first draft of fiction, but yeah. James. Yeah.
Wow, that's excellent. Now, Karen, you've got New York Times have said that your writer's equivalent of a magpie, her BDI, alert for the oddest of details and the weirdest of facts, which is fantastic to have that from the New York Times. Now, you were talking about the book Essex Girls, but it isn't the way. Now, when we say Essex Girls, there is an image and there's a vocal, there's everything that is that springs to mind. But this book is something different. So tell people about the book Essex Girls.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head there. That was one of the reasons I wanted to write it. We were going through that period where Essex girls had big earrings and white stilettos, and it just used to infuriate me. It still does. So I thought, no, I'm going to go out and find some real Essex girls and write about them. And there's so many in Essex, to be honest. You know, we've got Anne Knight, which was the anti-slavery campaigner, Kitty Canham, Catherine of Braganza, the queen of, I can't remember, Charles the Second. It's been such a long time since I've written it. She was actually in Essex. She visited a fair incognito, and I sort of dug that up and managed to find a couple of letters about that. Mary Boleyn, obviously, at Rochford Hall near Rayleigh, where I live. Mm-hmm. She was another Essex girl. All sorts of women. And so it came out as the book Essex Girl. And I'm very proud of that. Actually, it's my first one, followed on by Essex Boys, because I wanted a pigeon pair.
Yeah, and tell us about some of the Essex Boys, because there must be stories that kind of stick out in your mind from that book as well.
Well, yes. I mean, Henry VII and Henry VIII used Essex as their hunting ground. They had lodges here. We have Humphrey Repton, who was the landscape gardener for quite a few large houses in Essex. One of the little things I liked when I went to Ingrave Church, beautiful little church, but round the back, one of the walls on the outside is inscribed with lots and lots of basically graffiti. Yeah. And I just was so fascinated by this that I photographed it and I brought it home and I researched it. And you can sort of see an insight into those sort of Essex, literally Essex boys, basically waiting outside possibly, you know, for a church service or something, just scribbling their names in it, yeah, with the dates next to it as early as sort of 1704. Oh, and I thought, this puts you in touch with history. That's the passion I have, to feel it, to sort of almost taste it if you get close enough to it, because people are no different today as they've been in the past. It's just their technology that's changing, so they still feel, they still eat, sleep, worry, fall in love the way that we do today, but it was just then, and so the manners and the etiquettes were different, and their actual sort of the way they did things were different.
If you could get it, actually, I thought this question. If you could get into a time machine, just say time travel was possible, what time would you like to go back and be kind of a tourist in?
Oh dear, I'd want to go to the mall. but I think my favourite, to be honest, is the Georgian period. I do a lot of reenacting in the Tudor period, I tend to say Catherine of Aragon or some of those upper-class women, but I prefer the Georgian period because there was such a lot going on. There was expansion, there was trade, there was the navy was building up. All these discoveries were happening, and I think it must have been quite an exciting time, just generally. I mean, if you go into nitty-gritty, I'm sure the poor people wouldn't think the same way.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, the etiquettes and the way you had to behave. But I think generally it was an opening up of this country with other countries, with America. And I just think a silly little thing that comes to mind is when we think of clothing in my last book, Corsets and Cod Pieces. The clothing round about Georgian time again exploded. We had cotton coming in, which made it cheap for people to dress well, dress better.
Yeah.
So little things like that, I would like to go back to the Georgian times, I think.
And talking about that book as well, with because you can't, there were so many layers for women, all their undergarments. I mean, I've seen, there's actually a lady that's on YouTube that actually she puts on sort of Victorian clothing and shows you all the different layers that women had to wear and the corsets as well. It looked horrendous.
Oh, I know. Well, corsets are horrendous.
Yeah.
I can tell you.
Yes.
And there's also a way of dressing. You have to dress from the bottom up. When I get dressed up as a Tudor lady, there's such a lot of layers. And if you don't start with your shoes, you can't bend over at the end to actually put your shoes on. Yeah. So, you know, there's the stockings and there's the kirtles and the petticoats. And then there's another layer. And then you've got your gauntlet sleeves and you've got your hats. And there's such a lot of layers. And it was quite restrictive,
yes,
to be honest. I think that was another way society wanted to keep women, you know, in their place, to be honest.
And you go out normally, I mean, during lockdown, and lots changed for everybody, but part of your part of what you do is to actually go out and you give talks, and as you said, you dress up as well in the costumes. So how has lockdown been for you? Are you able to do stuff on Zoom, or you've been not able to do much?
Well, no, to be honest, it's dried up quite a bit. And the talks I give are generally the costume talk, so I have six mannequins all with a dress in a different period. So it's quite a bit of a show, and I take props, and it's quite animated. So I've had to say to some people, could we wait till we get back to face to face, because there's more entertainment value that way. And I find Zoom is quite it distances you, so I'm looking forward to getting back to that.
Yes,
to be honest, but it's a bit of a pain. I have to get my husband to help me. We have it almost like a pantechnicon, bringing all these mannequins who sit up in the loft when they're not being used, like so many sort of.
Well, as long as they're not in the lounge, that would be a bit weird. Actually,
they were for a little while, and we had some decorating done upstairs. Honestly, quite scary. Going around looking around the door, and there's six women looking at you,
just staring. Yeah.
Yes.
What's going to be next for you? Are you doing, you're saying you're going to be doing a novel that's come off the back of the book Essex Girls. So when do you think that's likely to be finished?
Well, because of lockdown, I'm really just researching and going through the first draft at the moment. I haven't written fiction before, so all my other ones are non-fiction. It's a totally different discipline, and there's things I need to sort of catch up on, and a lot of research needs to be done. So I'm just going to work my way through that this year, and hopefully things might take off next year. Definitely, but I'm enjoying doing it. It's good.
It's lovely to talk to you. Now, the books Essex Girls and Essex Boys are out. You'll be able to find them on Amazon and all good bookshops. And the other one you mentioned is Corsets and
Cod Pieces.
Yes. I just want to make sure I got that right. We didn't even cover cod pieces. How long, actually, we will cover them now. How long were they around for? What sort of era are we talking
only
about?
Only about 70 years in the late 16th century, sort of Henry VIII's time onwards. And they got bigger and bigger. The whole cod piece thing started off in the Middle Ages, basically as a covering for a man's particles, because they would only wear like trousers that were split in the middle, like two separate hose. And as fashions changed and the actual shirts they wore got shorter, things were a little bit on show. So, and there were actually laws to prevent that. But anyway, by the time it come back in Henry VIII's time, they got bigger and bigger. And mostly it was said to cover the fact that syphilis was such a bad thing that was going on at the time. Now, we called it the French pox. The French called it the English pox. Nobody wanted to own it, but men had to sort of deal with it. And it was said that this sort of codpiece would hide the bandages and the ointments and things like that. So that was one of them. But they didn't last more than about 70 years.
Yeah. Just very quick, and also I meant to mention, we would, as you're a historian, can you compare today with what's happening with COVID back to any point in history that you think is kind of similar?
Well, obviously, the Great Plague springs to mind.
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, I just had to have a glass of water here. Yes, and Samuel Pepys, sometimes if you look on Facebook, you actually see quotes from Samuel Pepys, his diaries, saying, you know, the young people won't settle down, or they're doing this and they're doing that. And you'd think that it was for today, but it's actually like in the past. And it's there is a similarity, I believe, that the not knowing, I think. I mean, we're much better today with our technology, but sometimes we know too much and a bit, you know, minuscule. We know one day something happens, the next couple of hours something is slightly different with the coronavirus, and we're in a state of anxiety. And I would have thought it must be the same in the 16th century, because they wouldn't know at all. They wouldn't even know where it's coming from or what was going to happen. So I think, again, on the human being type thing in history, nothing changes. I think we're feeling the same as they did, and they must have felt the same as we are.
Yes.
So I like that continuity, I think, is always there.
It's great to talk to you, Karen. Hopefully we'll talk to you again this year. And best of luck with all the investigation into your novel as well.
Thank you very much.
All right, you have a great day.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What a great, interesting chat. I love that. And also